49. Watching the World Transform. These light weavers, by no coincidence, included many who pursued the arts, namely writers, artists, musicians, painters, sculptors. Considering the Order's general temperament, the tales of their strange and varied mnemonic abilities may have been embellished. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 21, page 10. After leaving her carriage at a stable in the outer market, Shallan was led to a stairwell carved into the stone of a hillside. She climbed this, then stepped hesitantly out onto a terrace that had been cut from the side of the hill here. Light eyes wearing stylish clothing chatted over cups of wine at the patio's numerous ironwork tables. They were high enough here to look out over the war camps. The perspective was eastward, toward the origin. What an unnatural arrangement. It made her feel exposed. Shallan was accustomed to balconies, gardens, and patios all facing away from the storms. True, nobody was likely to be out here when a high storm was expected, but it just felt off to her. A master servant in black and white arrived and bowed, calling her Brightness Devar without need of an introduction. She'd have to get used to that. In Alethkar, she was a novelty, and an easily recognizable one. She let the servant lead her among the tables, sending her guards for the day off toward a larger room, cut farther into the stone to the right. This one had a proper roof and walls, so it could be completely closed off, and a group of other guards waited here upon the whims of their masters. Shallan drew the eyes of the other patrons. Well, good. She had come here to upset their world. The more people spoke of her, the better her chances of persuading them, when the time came, to listen to her regarding the Parshmen. Those were everywhere in camp, even here in this luxurious winehouse. She spotted three in the corner, moving wine bottles from wall-mounted racks to crates. They moved at a plodding yet implacable pace. A few more steps brought her to the marble balustrade right at the edge of the terrace. Here, Adolin had a table set off by itself with an unobstructed view directly east. Two members of Dalinar's houseguard stood by the wall a short distance away. Adolin was important enough, apparently, that his guards didn't need to wait with the others. Adolin browsed a folio, oversized by design so it wouldn't be mistaken for a woman's book. Shallan had seen some folios containing battle maps, others with designs for armor or pictures of architecture. She was amused as she caught sight of the glyphs for this one, with women's script underneath for further clarification. Fashions, out of Leofor and Aesir. Adolin looked as handsome as he had before. Maybe more so, now that he was obviously more relaxed. She would not let him muddle her mind. She had a purpose to this meeting, an alliance with House Colin to help her brothers and give her resources for exposing the Voidbringers and discovering Urithiru. She couldn't afford to come off as weak. She had to control the situation, could not act like a sycophant, and she couldn't... Adolin saw her enclose the portfolio. He stood up, grinning. Oh, storms! That smile! Brightness Shallan, he said, holding out a hand toward her. You are settling well in Sabariel's camp?
Yeah,
she said, grinning at him. That mop of unruly hair just made her want to reach out and run her fingers through it. Our children would have the strangest hair ever, she thought. His golden black Alethi locks, my red ones, and was she really thinking about their children? Already? Foolish girl. Yes, she continued, trying to de-melt a little. He has been quite kind to me.
It's probably because you're family, Adolin said, letting her sit, then pushing in her chair.
He did it himself, rather than allowing the master servant to do so. She would not have expected that of someone so high-born.
Sabariel only does what he feels he's forced to.
I think he may surprise you, Shallan said.
Oh, he's already done that on several occasions.
Really? When?
Well, Adolin said, sitting. He once produced a very, loud and inappropriate noise at a meeting with the king.
Adolin smiled, shrugging as if embarrassed, but he didn't blush, as Shallan might have in a similar situation.
Does that count?
I'm not sure. Knowing what I do of Uncle Sabariel, I doubt that such a thing is particularly surprising from him. Expected is more like it.
Adolin laughed, tossing his head back. Yes, I suppose you're right. That you are.
He seemed so confident. Not in a particularly conceited way, not like her father had been. In fact, it occurred to her that her father's attitude had been caused not by confidence, but the opposite.
Adolin seemed perfectly at ease both with his station and those around him. When he waved for the master servant to bring him a list of wines, he smiled at the woman, though she was dark-eyed. That smile was enough to produce a blush, even in a master servant.
Shallan was supposed to get this man to court her?
Storms! She'd felt far more capable when trying to scam the leader of the Ghost Bloods.
Act refined, Shallan told herself. Adolin has moved with the elite, and has been in relationships with the most sophisticated ladies of the world. He will expect that from you.
So, he said, flipping through the list of wines described by glyphs. We are supposed to get married.
I would lighten that phrasing, Bright Lord, Shallan said, choosing her words carefully. We aren't supposed to get married. Your cousin Yasna merely wanted us to consider a union, and your aunt seemed to agree.
The Almighty save a man when his female relatives collude about his future, Adolin said with a sigh. Sure, it's all right for Yasna to run about into her middle years without a spouse, but if I reach my 23rd birthday without a bride, it's like I'm some kind of menace. Sexist of her, don't you think?
Well, she wanted me to get married too, Shallan said. So I wouldn't call her sexist, merely Yasnaist?
She paused.
Yasnaginistic? No, drat. It would have to be Miss Yasnaistic, and that doesn't work nearly as well, does it?
You're asking me? Adolin asked, turning around the menu so she could see it. What do you think we should order?
Storms, she breathed. Those are all different kinds of wine?
Yeah, Adolin said.
He leaned toward her as if conspiratorial.
Honestly, I don't pay a lot of attention. Renarin knows the difference between them. He'll drone on if you let him. Me? I order something that sounds important, but I'm really just choosing based on color. He grimaced. We're technically at war. I won't be able to take anything too intoxicating, just in case. Kind of silly as there won't be any plateau runs today.
You're sure? I thought they were random.
Yeah, but my war camp isn't up. They almost never come too close before a high storm, anyway.
He leaned back, scanning the menu, before pointing at one of the wines and winking at the serving woman.
Shallan felt cold.
Wait, high storm?
Yeah, Adolin said, checking the clock in the corner. Sabariel had mentioned that those were growing more and more common around here. Should come any time now. You didn't know?
She sputtered, looking eastward across the cracked landscape.
Act poised, she thought. Elegant!
Instead, a primal part of her wanted to scramble for a hole and hide. Suddenly she imagined she could sense the pressure dropping, as if the air itself were trying to escape.
Could she see it out there, starting? No, that was nothing.
She squinted anyway. I didn't look at the list of storms Sabariel keeps, Shallan forced herself to say. In all honesty, it was probably outdated, knowing him. I've been busy.
Huh, Adolin said. I wondered why you didn't ask about this place. I just assumed you'd heard of it already.
This place. The open balcony facing east.
The light eyes drinking wine now seemed anticipatory to her, with an air of nervousness. The second room, the large one for bodyguards she'd seen with the substantial doors, made far more sense now. "We're here to watch?" Shallan whispered.
"It's the new fad," Adolin said. "Apparently we're supposed to sit here until the storm is almost upon us, then run into that other room and take shelter. I've wanted to come for weeks now, and only just managed to convince my minders that I'd be safe here."
He said that last part somewhat bitterly.
"We can go move into the safe room now if you want."
"No," Shallan said, forcing herself to pry her fingers from the table edge. "I'm fine."
"You look pale."
"It's natural."
"Because you're Vaden?"
"Because I'm always at the edge of panic these days. Oh, is that our wine?"
"Poised," she reminded herself yet again.
She pointedly did not look eastward. The servant had brought them two cups of brilliant blue wine. Adolin picked his up and studied it. He smelled it, sipped it, then nodded in satisfaction and dismissed the servant with a parting smile. He watched the woman's backside as she retreated. Shallan raised an eyebrow at him, but he didn't seem to notice that he'd done anything wrong. He looked back at Shallan and leaned in again.
"I know you're supposed to swish the wine about and taste it and things," he whispered, "but nobody has ever explained to me what I'm looking for."
"Bugs floating in the liquid, perhaps?"
"Nah, my new food taster would have spotted one of those."
He smiled, but Shallan realized he probably wasn't joking. A thin man who didn't wear a uniform had walked over to chat with the bodyguards. Probably the food taster. Shallan sipped her wine. It was good. Slightly sweet, a tad spicy. Not that she could spare much thought for its taste with that storm. "Stop it," she told herself, smiling at Adolin. She needed to make sure this meeting went well for him. "Get him to talk about himself." That was one piece of advice she remembered from books. "Plateau runs," Shallan said. "How do you know when to begin one, anyway?"
"Hmm? Oh, we have spotters," Adolin said, lounging back in his chair. "Men who stand atop towers with these enormous spyglasses. They inspect every plateau we can reach in a reasonable time, watching for a chrysalis."
"I hear you've captured your share of those."
"Well, I probably shouldn't talk about it. Father doesn't want it to be a competition anymore."
He looked at her, expectant. "But surely you can talk about what happened before," Shallan said, feeling as if she were filling an expected role.
"I suppose," Adolin said. "There was this one run a few months back where I seized the chrysalis basically by myself. You see, Father and I, we would usually jump the chasm first and clear the way for the bridges."
"Isn't that dangerous?" Shallan asked, dutifully looking at him with widened eyes.
"Yes, but we're shard-bearers. We have strength and power granted by the Almighty. It's a great responsibility, and it's our duty to use it for the protection of our men. We save hundreds of lives by going across first. Lets us lead the army firsthand."
He paused. "So brave," Shallan said, in what she hoped was a breathy, adoring voice.
"Well, it's the right thing to do, but it is dangerous. That day I leaped across, but my father and I got pushed too far apart by the Parshendi. He was forced to jump back across, and a blow to his leg meant that when he landed, his greave, that's a piece of armor on the leg, cracked. That made it dangerous for him to jump back again. I was left alone while he waited for the bridge to lock down."
He paused again. She was probably supposed to ask what happened next. "What if you need to poop?" she asked instead.
"Well, I put my back to the chasm and laid about me with my sword, intending to..." "Wait, what did you say?"
"Poop," Shallan said. "You're out there on the battlefield, encased in metal like a crab in its shell. What do you do if nature calls?"
"Adolin frowned at her.
That is not something any woman has ever asked me before.
Yay for originality, Shallan said, though she blushed as she said it.
Yasna would have been displeased.
Couldn't Shallan mind her tongue for a single conversation? She'd gotten him talking about something he liked. Everything had been going well. Now this.
Well, Adolin said slowly. Every battle has breaks in the flow, and men rotate in and out of the front lines. For every 5 minutes you're fighting, you often have almost as many resting. When a shard-bearer pulls back, men inspect his armor for cracks, give him something to drink or eat, and help him with what you just mentioned. It's not something that makes a good topic of conversation, Brightness. We don't really talk about it.
That's precisely what makes it a good topic of conversation, she said. I can find out about wars and shardbearers and glorious killing in the official accounts. The grimy details, though? Nobody writes those down.
Well, it does get grimy, Adolin said with a grimace, taking a drink.
I can't believe I'm saying this. You can't really wipe yourself in shard plate, so someone has to do it for you. Makes me feel like an infant. Then, sometimes, you just don't have time.
And? He inspected her, narrowing his eyes. What? She asked.
Just trying to determine if you're secretly wit wearing a wig. This is something he would do to me.
I'm not doing anything to you, she said. I'm just curious. And honestly, she was. She'd thought about this. Perhaps more than it deserved consideration.
Well, Adolin said, if you must know, an old adage on the battlefield teaches that it's better to be embarrassed than dead. You can't let anything draw your attention from fighting. So, yes, I, Adolin Colin, cousin to the king, heir to the Colin princedom, have shat myself in my shard plate. 3 times, all on purpose.
He downed the rest of his wine.
You are a very strange woman.
If I must remind you, Shallan said, you are the one who opened our conversation today with a joke about Sabariel's flatulence.
I guess I did at that.
He grinned.
This is not exactly going the way it's supposed to, is it?
Is that a bad thing?
No,
Adolin said. Then his grin widened.
Actually, it's kind of refreshing. Do you know how many times I've told that story about saving the plateau run?
I'm sure you were quite brave.
Quite.
Though probably not as brave as the poor men who have to clean your armor.
Adolin bellowed out a laugh. For the first time it seemed like something genuine. An emotion from him that wasn't scripted or expected. He pounded his fist on the table, then waved for more wine, wiping a tear from his eye. The grin he gave her threatened to bring out another blush.
Wait, Shallan thought. Did that just work? She was supposed to be acting feminine and delicate, not asking men what it's like to have to defecate in battle.
All right. Adolin
said, taking the cup of wine. He didn't even glance at the serving woman this time.
What other dirty secrets do you want to know? You've got me laid bare. There are tons of things the stories and official histories don't mention.
The chrysalises, Shallan said, eager. What do they look like?
That's what you want to know? Adolin said, scratching his head. I thought for sure you'd want to know about the chafing.
Shallan got out her satchel, setting a piece of paper on the table and starting a sketch. From what I've been able to determine, nobody has done a solid study on the chasm fiends. There are some sketches of dead ones, but that's it, and the anatomy on those is dreadful. They must have an interesting life cycle. They haunt these chasms, but I doubt they actually live here. There's not enough food to support creatures of their size. That means they come here as part of some migratory pattern. They come here to pupate.
Have you ever seen a juvenile before they form the chrysalis?
No, Adolin said, scooting his chair around the table. It often happens at night, and we don't spot them until morning. They're hard to see out there, colored like rock. Makes me think the Parshendi must be watching us. We end up fighting over plateaus so often. It might mean they spot us mobilizing, then use the direction we're going to judge where to find the chrysalis. We get a head start, but they move faster over the plains, so we arrive near the same time.
He trailed off, cocking his head to get a better look at her sketch.
Storms? That's really good, Shallan.
Thanks.
No, I mean really good.
She'd done a quick sketch of several types of chrysalises she had read about in her books, along with quick depictions of a man beside them for size reference. It wasn't very good. She'd done it for speed. Yet Adolin seemed genuinely impressed. The shape and texture of the chrysalis, Shallan said, could help place the chasm fiends in a family of similar animals.
It looks most like this one, Adolin said, scooting closer and pointing at one of the sketches. When I've touched one, they've been hard as rock. It's hard to dig into one without a shard blade. It can take men with hammers forever to break into one.
Shallan said, making a note.
You're sure?
Yeah, that's how they look. Why?
That's the chrysalis of a Unerig, Shallan said. A great shell from the seas around Marabethia. The people there feed criminals to them, I'm told.
Ouch.
This might be a false positive, a coincidence. The Unerig are an aquatic species. The only time they come onto land is to pupate. Seems tenuous to assume a relationship to the chasm fiends.
Sure, Adolin said, taking a drink of wine. If you say so.
This is probably important, Shallan said.
For research, yeah, I know. Aunt Navani is always talking about things like that.
This could be of more practical import than that, Shallan said. About how many of these things total are killed by your armies and the Parshendi each month?
Adolin shrugged. One every 3 days or so, I'd guess. Sometimes more, sometimes less. So 15 or so a month?
You see the problem?
Adolin shook his head. No, sorry. I'm kind of useless at anything that doesn't involve someone getting stabbed.
She smiled at him. Nonsense. You proved skilled at choosing wine.
I did that basically at random.
And it tastes delicious, Shallan said. Empirical proof of your methodology. Now, you probably don't see the problem because you don't have the proper facts. Great shells generally are slow to breed and slow to grow. This is because most ecosystems can only support a small population of apex predators of this size.
I've heard some of those words before.
She looked to him, raising an eyebrow. He'd gotten a lot closer to her, in order to look at her drawing. He wore a faint cologne, a brisk woody scent.
Oh, my. All right, he said, chuckling as he inspected her drawings. I'm not as dense as I feign. I see what you're saying. You really think we could kill enough of them that it could be a problem? I mean, people have been doing great shell hunts for generations, and the beasts are still around.
You're not hunting them here, Adolin. You're harvesting them. You're systematically destroying their juvenile population. Have fewer of them been pupating lately?
Yeah, he said, though he sounded reluctant. We think it might be the season.
It might be. Or it might be that after over 5 years of harvesting, the population is starting to dwindle. Animals like the chasm fiends don't normally have predators. Suddenly losing 150 or more of their numbers a year could be catastrophic to their population.
Adolin frowned. The gem hearts we get feed the people of the war camps. Without a constant flow of new stones of reasonable size, the soul casters will eventually crack the ones we have, and we won't be able to support the armies here.
I'm not telling you to stop your hunts, Shallan said, blushing. This probably wasn't the point she should be making. Urethiru and the Parshman, that was the immediate problem. Still, she needed to gain Adolin's trust. If she could provide useful help regarding the chasm fiends, perhaps he'd listen when she approached him with something even more revolutionary.
"All I'm saying," Shallan continued, "is that it's worth thinking about and studying. What would it be like if you could start raising chasm fiends, growing them to juveniles in batches like men raise chulls? Instead of hunting 3 a week, what if you could breed and harvest hundreds?"
"That would be useful," Adolin said thoughtfully.
"What would you need in order to make it happen?"
"Well, I wasn't saying... I mean..." She stopped herself.
"I need to get out onto the Shattered Plains," she said more firmly. "If I'm going to try to figure out how to breed them, I'd need to see one of these chrysalises before it's been cut into. Preferably, I'd get to see an adult chasm fiend, and ideally, I'd like a captured juvenile to study."
"Just a small list of impossibilities."
"Well, you did ask."
"I might be able to get you out onto the plains," Adolin said.
"Father promised that he'd show Yasna a dead chasm fiend, so I think he was planning to take her out after a hunt. Seeing a chrysalis, though, those rarely appear close to camp. I'd have to take you dangerously close to Parshendi territory."
"I'm sure you can protect me."
He looked at her, expectant.
"What?" Shallan asked.
"I'm waiting for a wisecrack."
"I was serious," Shallan said. "With you there, I'm certain the Parshendi wouldn't dare get close."
Adolin smiled. "I mean," she said, "the stench alone."
"I suspect I'm never going to live down telling you about that."
"Never," Shallan agreed. "You are honest, detailed, and engaging. Those aren't the sorts of things I let myself forget about a man." His smile broadened.
"Storms, those eyes."
"Careful," Shallan told herself. "Careful. Capsule took you in easily. Don't repeat that."
"I'll see what I can do," Adolin said. "The Parshendi might not be an issue in the near future."
"Really?" He nodded.
"It's not widely known, though we've told the High Princes. Father is going to be meeting with some of the Parshendi leaders tomorrow. It could end up starting a peace negotiation."
"That's fantastic."
"Yeah," Adolin said. "I'm not hopeful. The assassin... Anyway, we'll see what happens tomorrow, though I'll have to do this between the other work Father has for me."
"The duels," Shallan said, leaning in. "What is going on there, Adolin?"
He seemed hesitant.
"Whatever is going on in the camps now," she said, speaking more softly. "Yasna didn't know about it. I feel woefully ignorant about politics here, Adolin. Your father and High Prince Sadius had a falling out, I've gathered. The king has changed the nature of these plateau runs, and everyone is talking about how you're dueling now. But from what I've been able to gather, you never stopped dueling."
"It's different," he said. "Now I'm dueling to win."
"And you didn't before?"
"No. Then I dueled to punish."
He glanced about, then met her eyes.
"It began when my father started seeing visions."
He continued. He poured out a surprising story, one with far greater detail than she'd anticipated. A story of betrayal and of hope. Visions of the past. A unified Alethkar, prepared to weather a coming storm. She didn't know what to make of it all, though she gathered that Adolin was telling her of it because he knew the rumors in camp. She'd heard of Dalinar's fits, of course, and had an inkling of what Sadius had done. When Adolin mentioned that his father wanted the Knights Radiant to return, Shallan felt a chill. She glanced about for Pattern, he'd be close, but couldn't find him. The meat of the story, at least in Adolin's estimation, was the betrayal by Sadius. The young prince's eyes grew dark, face flushed, as he talked of being abandoned on the plains, surrounded by enemies. He seemed embarrassed when he spoke of salvation by a lowly bridge crew. He's actually confiding in me, Shallan thought, feeling a thrill. She rested her free hand on his arm as he spoke, an innocent gesture, but it seemed to spur him forward as he quietly explained Dalinar's plan. She wasn't certain he should be sharing all of this with her. They barely knew one another. But speaking of it seemed to lift a weight from Adolin's back, and he grew more relaxed.
I guess, Adolin said, that's the end of it. I'm supposed to win shard blades off the others, taking away their bite, embarrassing them.
But I don't know if it will work. Why not? Shallan asked.
The ones who agree to duel me aren't important enough, he said, forming a fist. If I win too much from them, the real targets, the High Princes, will get scared of me and refuse duels. I need matches that are more high profile. No, what I need is to duel Sadeus. Pound that grinning face of his into the stones and take back my father's blade. He's too oily, though. We'll never get him to agree.
She found herself wishing desperately to do something, anything, to help. She felt herself melting at the intense concern in those eyes, the passion. Remember Capsule, she reminded herself again. Well, Adolin wasn't likely to try to assassinate her. But then that didn't mean she should let her brain turn to curry paste around him. She cleared her throat, tearing her eyes away from his and looking down at her sketch. Father, she said, I've left you upset. I'm not very good at this wooing thing.
Could have fooled me, Adolin said, resting his hand on her arm.
Shallan covered another blush by ducking her head and digging into her satchel. You, she said, need to know what your cousin was working on before she died.
Another volume in her father's biography?
No, Shallan said, getting out a sheet of paper. Adolin. Yasna thought that the Voidbringers were going to return.
What? He said, frowning. She didn't even believe in the Almighty. Why would she believe in the Voidbringers?
She had evidence, Shallan said, tapping the paper with one finger. A lot of that sank in the ocean, I'm afraid, but I do have some of her notes. And, Adolin, how hard do you think it would be to convince the High Princes to get rid of their Parshmen?
Get rid of what?
How hard would it be to make everyone stop using Parshmen as slaves? Give them away, or
storms.
She didn't want to start a genocide here, did she? But these were the Voidbringers. Or set them free or something. Get them out of the war camps.
How difficult would it be? Adolin said. Off the cuff, I'd say impossible. That or really impossible. Why would we even want to do something like that?
Yasna thought they might be related to the Voidbringers and their return. Adolin shook his head, looking bemused.
Shallan, we can barely get the High Princes to fight this war properly. If my father or the king were to require everyone to get rid of their Parshmen, storms, it would break the kingdom in a heartbeat.
So Yasna was right on that count as well. Unsurprising. Shallan was interested to see how violently Adolin himself opposed the idea. He took a big gulp of wine, seeming utterly floored. Time to pull back, then. This meeting had gone very well. She wouldn't want it to end on a sour note. It was something Yasna said, Shallan said. But really I'd rather that Bright Lady Navani judge how important a suggestion it was. She would know her daughter, her notes, better than anyone. Adolin nodded.
So go to her.
Shallan tapped the paper in her fingers. I've tried. She's not been very accommodating.
Aunt Navani can be overbearing sometimes.
It's not that, Shallan said, scanning the words on the letter. It was a reply she'd gotten after requesting to meet the woman and discuss her daughter's work. She doesn't want to meet with me. She barely seems to want to acknowledge I exist. Adolin sighed.
She doesn't want to believe. About Yasna, I mean. You represent something to her, the truth in a way. Give her time.
She just needs to grieve.
I'm not certain if this is something that should wait, Adolin.
I'll talk to her, he said. How about that?
Wonderful, she said. Much like you yourself.
He grinned. It's nothing. I mean, if we're going to be halfway almost kind of maybe getting married, we should probably look out for one another's interests.
He paused.
Don't mention that Parshman thing to anyone else, though. That's not something that will go over well.
She nodded absently, then realized she'd been staring at him. She was going to kiss those lips of his someday. She let herself imagine it. And Ash's eyes, he had a very friendly way about him. She hadn't expected that in someone so high-born. She'd never actually met anyone of his rank before coming to the Shattered Plains, but all the men she knew near his level had been stiff and even angry. Not Adolin. Storms. But being with him was something else she could get very, very used to. People began to stir on the patio. She ignored them for a moment, but then many began to stand up from their seats, looking eastward. High storm. Right. Shallan felt a spike of alarm as she looked toward the origin of storms. The wind picked up, leaves and bits of refuse fluttering across the patio. Down below, the outer market had been packed up, tents folded away, awnings withdrawn, windows closed. The entirety of the war camps braced itself. Shallan stuffed her things into her satchel, then rose to her feet, stepping to the edge of the terrace, freehand fingers on the stone railing there. Adolin joined her. Behind them, people whispered and gathered. She heard iron grinding across stone. The Parshmen had begun pulling away the tables and chairs, stowing them to both protect them and make a path for the Light Eyes to retreat to safety. The horizon had bled from light to dark, like a man flushing with anger. Shallan gripped the railing, watching the entire world transform. Vines withdrew, rock buds closed, grass hid in its holes. They knew, somehow. They all knew. The air grew chill and wet, and pre-storm winds gusted against her, blowing her hair back. Below and just to the north, the war camps had piled refuse and waste to be blown away with the storm. It was a forbidden practice in most civilized areas, where that waste could blow into the next town. Out here there was no next town. The horizon grew even darker. A few people on the balcony fled to the back room's safety, their nerves getting the better of them. Most stayed, silent. Windspren zipped in tiny rivers of light overhead. Shallan took Adolin by the arm, staring eastward. Minutes passed until finally she saw it. The storm wall. A huge sheet of water and debris blown before the storm. In places it flashed with light from behind, revealing movement and shadows within. Like the skeleton of a hand when light illuminated the flesh, there was something inside this wall of destruction. Most of the people fled the balcony, though the storm wall was still distant. In moments, only a handful remained, Shallan and Adolin among them. She watched, transfixed, as the storm approached. It took longer than she'd expected. It was moving at a terrible speed, but it was so large they'd been able to spot it from quite a distance. It consumed the shattered plains, one plateau at a time. Soon it loomed over the war camps, coming on with a roar. "We should go," Adolin eventually said. She barely heard him. Life. Something lived inside that storm, something that no artist had ever drawn, no scholar had ever described. "Shallan." Adolin began to tow her toward the protected room. She grabbed the railing with her free hand, remaining in place, clutching her satchel to her chest with her safe hand. That humming, that was pattern. She'd never been so close to a high storm. Even when she'd been only inches away from one, separated by a window shutter, she had not been as close as she was now, watching that darkness descend upon the war camps. I need to draw.
Shallan, Adolin said, pulling her away from the railing. They'll close the doors if we don't go now.
With a start, she realized that everyone else had left the balcony. She allowed Adolin to get her moving, and she joined him in a dash across the empty patio. They reached the room at the side, packed with huddled light eyes who watched in terror. Adolin's guards entered right after her, and several parchments slammed the thick doors. The bar thumped in place, locking out the sky, leaving them to the light of spheres on the walls. Shallan counted. The high storm hit. She could feel it. Something beyond the thumping of the door and the distant sound of thunder. 6 seconds, she said.
What?
Adolin asked. His voice was hushed, and others in the room spoke in whispers. It took 6 seconds after the servants closed the doors until the storm hit. We could have spent that much longer out there. Adolin regarded her with an incredulous expression.
When you first realized what we were doing on that balcony, you seemed terrified.
I was.
Now you wish you'd stayed out until the last moment before the storm hit?
Yeah, she said, blushing.
I have no idea what to make of you.
Adolin regarded her.
You're not like anyone I've met.
It's my air of feminine mystique.
He raised an eyebrow.
It's a term we use, she said, when we're feeling particularly erratic. It's considered polite not to point out that you know this. Now, do we just wait in here?
In this box of a room?
Adolin asked, sounding amused.
We're light eyes, not livestock.
He gestured to the side, where several servants had opened doors leading to places burrowed deeper into the mountain.
2 sitting rooms, one for men, the other for women.
Shallan nodded. Sometimes during a high storm, the genders would retire to separate rooms to chat. It looked like the winehouse followed this tradition. They'd probably have finger food. Shallan walked toward the indicated room, but Adolin rested a hand on her arm, making her pause.
I'll see about getting you out onto the shattered plains, he said. Amaram wants to go explore more, he said, than he gets to during a plateau run. I think he and Father are having dinner to talk about it tomorrow night, and I can ask then if I can bring you. I'll also talk to Aunt Navani. Maybe we can discuss what I've come up with at the feast next week.
There's a feast next week?
There's always a feast next week, Adolin said. We just have to figure out who's throwing it. I'll send to you.
She smiled, and then they separated. Next week is not soon enough, she thought. I'll have to find a way to drop in on him when it's not too awkward. Had she really promised to help him breed chasm fiends? As if she needed something else to take her time. Still, she felt good about the day as she entered the women's sitting room, her guards taking their places in the appropriate waiting room. Shallan strolled through the women's room, which was well lit with gemstones gathered in goblets, cut stones but not in spheres. An expensive display. She felt that if her teachers had been watching, both would have been disappointed at her conversation with Adolin. Tin would have wanted her to manipulate the prince more. Yasna would have wanted Shallan to be more poised, more in control of her tongue. It seemed that Adolin liked her anyway. That made her want to cheer. The looks of the women about her washed away that emotion. Some turned backs toward Shallan, and others pressed their lips together and looked her up and down skeptically. Courting the kingdom's most eligible bachelor was not going to make her popular. Not when she was an outsider. That didn't bother Shallan. She didn't need acceptance from these women. She just needed to find Urethiru and the secrets it contained. Gaining Adolin's trust was a big step in that direction. She decided to reward herself by stuffing her face with sweets and thinking further on her plan to sneak into Brightlord Amaram's house.